The Money Show.
Personal Finance.
Personal Finance brought to you by Liberty, your financial partner, on however and whenever you picture retirement. You can live it your way. Hashtag in it with you. Liberty Group is an authorized FSP. T's and C's apply. Good evening. Welcome to the last half hour of The Money Show, joined as always on a Thursday night by Warren Ingram. Warren is a personal financial advisor and executive director at Galileo Capital, on the line to us this evening. Talk to me about the marketing of investment products, Warren, and it's this wonderful thing. It's called a fact sheet. And the fact sheet usually is pretty glowing. It's pretty rosy. It's pretty robust. And it tells you good things. It tells you how much money this fund made last month and tells you how much it's made over the last year. And then it tells you how much it's made since inception. And then it compares to another fund or to another sector or to another benchmark, which it has chosen to compare itself to. And it looks like the best Christmas present anybody could ever hope to give you. And then you look at your own investment performance and it's not, doesn't have the same color ribbon on it always.
Yeah, it's amazing how often that happens. You know, and people look at this and they get really upset. You know, they'll see that over the last 12 months, you know, the fund has delivered 53%, and they go in and a year later they look back and they say, well, hang on, you know, my investment delivered a grand, you know, minus 5%. What's going on? And I think just to understand, you know, the one thing about a fact sheet is it does look backwards. So it's always telling you, you know, it's like driving forward and looking in the rearview mirror. It's telling you about what's happened in the fund and potentially the risks and those kinds of things. But really, it's giving you history. And so, you know, the first thing to understand is when you make an investment and you're looking at that fact sheet, if the returns are really glowing and it does look amazing, the likelihood is that, you know, the fund has been through a particularly good time. And, you know, if you're using a farming analogy, you know, it might have had its seventh year of wonderful rain and it might be about to turn and go through the next 7 years of drought. So just be careful that you might be buying something on the basis of past performance, and that doesn't necessarily repeat in the month or the year or even the decade ahead. So I think that's the first thing. But the other thing is that a lot of the time when we look at these funds, they're showing their growth, before other costs. So there'll always be, if it's a unit trust, for example, there will be a management fee built into the performance of the fund, and you will certainly see that. But you won't, for example, see if you're paying an administration fee to a platform, you know, to a LISP. You know, let's say you've got a retirement annuity that owns this fund. You won't see that cost in there. You definitely won't see an advisor cost in there as well. So there are going to be a range of costs that will come off your investment, which might not come off the actual cost of the fund. And that's really where a lot of the time the performance looks very different. And then the other thing is, of course, you know, if you're investing money on a monthly basis or even just periodically, you know, let's say three or four times a year you do a lump sum investment into your fund, that's going to look very different to what the fact sheet shows you, because the fact sheet says, you know, you invested one amount on the 1st of January, it stays invested for the whole of the year, and it shows you the growth on that money at the end of the year. So it's a different thing if you've been buying into the fund regularly, because you might be buying when the markets are rising, you know, for the first 3 or 6 months of the year, and then they're falling for the next 3 months of the year, and you know, your performance just won't look the same. So there are lots of reasons why the two don't necessarily match up. Your performance and what it says on the box.
What are the rules around cost disclosure? Because I think so many people are so often disappointed. Is it the role of the financial advisor to say, okay, you're buying into XYZ unit trust. It charges 1.5% because these are very clever and expensive people who've got expensive houses and boats. And so we need to pay them a nice fee for their expertise, and they may be very good at their jobs. And then the platform is going to charge you another 0.5%. I'm going to charge you, because I'm giving you this advice, another 1%. So your total cost here is not 1.5%. But it is in fact 2-3%, and that means if you earn, you know, 10% on your money this year, well, actually you're only really going to be getting 7. So your 100,000 is going to look like 107 at the end of the year, not 110.
I mean, I think it's an absolute standard. I mean, it's not something that's a sort of a nice to have in the industry at all. It's something that an advisor must tell you before you commit to, you know, 1 cent. To an investment, is to say, all of the fees you've just described, every single cost that you'll be paying, they need to explain it to you. They need to make it clear and very simple, very understandable, and in real plain language. You know, and I think there's a law that's been around for quite some time now. It's called the FASE Act. And really what that does is it lays out these disclosures that need to be made to investors before they make an investment. And I think a lot of the time, you know, those things kind of get hidden and glossed over. But so I think it's critical, you know, if you're making an investment, you know, especially into a fund like this, where you might not be sure on all the costs, the first thing to do is to really slow down and say to the advisor, you know, don't be embarrassed to say to an advisor, I'm sorry, I just don't understand. What does that mean? You know, if I'm going to invest 100,000 rand with you, can you tell me in rands how much am I going to be paying, actually, you know, top to bottom, head to toe, all of the costs? Because a lot of the time, you know, advisors would say, no, well, the fund cost is 1.5%, and, you know, you pay some other charges, but you know, you'll still get the bulk of the growth, and that's just not good enough. You know, it needs to be clearly written down, clearly explained to you, and as I say, you know, an investor who doesn't do this for a living shouldn't feel embarrassed to say, I just don't understand percentages. I don't understand what you're describing here. Please make it plain. Please explain it to me in a way I understand. The only person that's making a mistake, you know, if an investor doesn't understand, the only person that's messing it up is the advisor. The advisor has to be able to explain this to any investor who wants to commit money. And I think that's it's often, I find investors are a little bit shy to admit that they don't understand or they feel embarrassed, and there's just absolutely nothing to be embarrassed about. Our industry, the investment industry, makes things far too complicated, you know, too much jargon, and for no reason at all.
Warren, thank you for that. A lovely question for us this evening, and it's so interesting. This person is asking for anonymity, and when I ask you the question, you'll find out why. They'll have somebody queuing at the gate if they're not careful. I have very successfully used Easy Equities to invest offshore in US dollars, and I love it. We now have a lump sum to invest, and I'd like to take 5 million rand offshore, 1 million rand a year at a time. Funny enough, now that it's a large amount, I'm a little nervous to use a DIY platform. So I got a proposal from a financial advisor to invest, but their fee structure is 1, too high at 3%, and 2, confusing, leading me to believe it's more than 3%. It's a fabulous conundrum. My question is a platform like Easy Equities fine enough to use for large sums, or is it best to use an advisor? That is the question this evening. And I had such a wonderful conversation the other day with somebody from Easy Equities, and they just were talking the other day that we have signed up 1 million people. I said, but how many of those are active? And a good 450,000 of those people are active. And do you know what the average portfolio size is amongst those 450,000 people? What would you guess?
I don't know, but I'm going to go with 100,000.
It's actually considerably smaller than that. It's actually 36,000. So that's the average portfolio size of, and there'll be some people with big portfolios and some people with tiny portfolios, but the average size is 36,000 across the 450,000 active accounts. And so that's why this question is such a good one, because this is big money. This is no advice-driven money. So I'm curious as to your view on this one, Warren Ingram. Back, give you a moment to think about it, and we'll chat to Warren Ingram further in a moment.
The Money Show.
Personal finance.
So our mystery correspondent has got 1 million rand a year to invest and wants to take it offshore, and, you know, was intimidated by the DIY approach and approached an advisor, but then felt uncomfortable about the fees and the costs and said the 3% was too much and there were possibly other costs and they weren't sure. So, Warren, what is the best approach here? Oh, hold on. I'm so used to you being on Zoom that I forgot to click you on the phone. Sorry. So start again with a spontaneous response. What is the right thing to do here?
I think it's a brilliant question for a couple of reasons. One, and I feel like a psychologist on the couch, because we need to talk about the intimidation factor simply because, you know, the amounts are bigger. I think that's an issue to address. And then secondly, you know, the DIY versus the advisory just in general. And I think firstly, you know, there are probably a lot of people that would be very comfortable to do their own investments with smaller amounts. And as soon as you add a zero, for I think very understandable reasons, you know, the fear factor jumps up, you know, and I can understand it, but I don't think it necessarily changes anything just because the amounts are larger. if you feel comfortable as an investor to make sensible long-term decisions, you're happy to do your homework, you have a good understanding of what's going on, the fact that you're investing large amounts shouldn't dissuade you from doing it on your own. It just means, you know, just make sure you've done your due diligence, make sure you've done your homework, and don't, you know, don't be intimidated just because the size of your investment is larger. However, you know, the moment you feel that fear, the fear is a dangerous thing because it can start to impact your investment decisions and actually change you from being a rational investor to being an irrational investor when markets fall over, or, you know, we've got load shedding, or, you know, the COVID wave 74, whatever it is. It could suddenly spark your fear into irrationality. So in a situation like that, I think to get advice is not a bad thing, but you don't have to go and use an advisor to say, okay, build me a plan, take my money, go and invest it, and do everything, and I'll just sit back. You know, there are many ways to engage an advisor. You know, one of them is you simply sit down, pay them for an hour of their time to say, this is what I'm thinking of doing. This is the investment platform that I'm thinking of. You know, tell me the rights and wrongs of this, the good and the bad, and go away and do it on your own again. So certainly, I don't think there's anything wrong with trying that as an approach.
Now, this is such an important point because it's the changing nature of advice. People are moving away more and more and more away from taking percentages and saying, hold on a second, if you go to consult a lawyer and they give you advice, you pay them an hourly rate and they will come up with advice as to how you should tackle a particular problem. Why would you not do the same thing with a financial advisor? You go in with your opinions, with your limited understanding, with your biases, and they would direct you, and you either accept the advice or you don't accept the advice. But at least you've moved forward at a relatively small cost, particularly when you're thinking of investing large amounts of money.
Sure, and I think there are a lot of people that, you know, that are starting to go that way as investors, that are thinking this way, you know, have a level of comfort with doing their own research to a point, and are certainly comfortable to take on the administration hassle of you know, managing the money. I think that's, you know, that's often an understated part of the investment world, is the kind of the nuts and bolts of the industry. But there are going to be people that just don't feel comfortable. And I think there, you know, again, on the other end of the spectrum, you know, don't feel now, you know, that you're kind of somehow losing or a loser because you take on advice and you use an advisor to help you on an ongoing basis. There are a lot of people that are busy, don't understand investments, don't really want to understand that would, you know, derive great value from the let's say the older model. And I think, you know, the to me, if I look at the way investors work, there are probably three broad groups. You know, there's one group that 100% can do it entirely on their own. And you know, they don't need to speak to anybody ever. And I think that's about a third of all people. And then there'll be another third of people that don't want to know anything about investing or about their money. They want to trust an advisor. They want to just kind of hand it over, look at their statements every now and then, and know that things are being taken care of. And then the middle third are people that are kind of saying, I'll do some of the work. I'll take some advice when I need it, and I'll pick and choose almost on a menu as to how I work. And in that instance, I think, you know, this person who wrote it, I think they're kind of in that, it feels to me, in that category. And so, you know, is it wrong to pay an advisor 3%? I'm suspecting it's 3% a year, you know, for advice and product, you know, on amounts of, let's say, 5 million rand. Definitely. I think it's too high. You know, I think if you want a benchmark for advice and fees, for fund fees and the like altogether, it's probably in the region of about 2% and dropping, you know, not 2% and rising. But in a situation like this, for somebody who's really comfortable, I think they really should be taking a little bit of advice and doing it themselves.
If only it's to have the sounding board. If only it's to have the sounding board, and if you're uncomfortable or uncertain, you get that support. And also then to understand the tax implications, the issues of jurisdictions to where you know, assets are domiciled, because that stuff matters too. Because again, as the willing and able amateur, when it comes to being able to keep calm and ride cycles and all of that sort of stuff, that's one part of this. But there's a huge amount of technical stuff in the background, which you've really got to be on top of in terms of understanding the consequences of making particular investment decisions for when you want to realize any gains you might have, because you might be investing in a jurisdiction that says, but you don't live here, I'm going to tax you a huge amount.
Absolutely. You know, I think that's a lot of the time, you know, investors just forget about that stuff. You know, they look at, you know, Vanguard in America, you know, doing so well, or they want to buy their Amazon or their Apple, and off they go. You know, they buy these wonderful American investments in America, even though they live in South Africa. They don't realize, for example, that, you know, 40% of everything they have could be given to the American tax man if, you know, if they pass away and their assets in America are worth more than $60,000. And you know, I mean, South Africa is a high tax jurisdiction, and not even we charge that, you know, that kind of death duty. So that's a huge issue. And I think also the other thing for a DIY investor is just understanding the costs as your investment numbers get bigger. So you know, an investment platform on it, especially for DIY investors, might be very cheap in terms of rand amounts for smaller investors. So let's just say you're investing 1,000 rand at a time, and you know they're only charging you 60 rand for every 1,000 rand that you're investing. But what you might need to find out is when you're investing larger amounts, are those costs still reasonable, or are they suddenly jumping up to much bigger amounts because they're actually been charging you a percentage? So the percentage feels small because you've been investing small amounts, and suddenly on 5 million rand, you know, you're paying, you know, whatever it is, 60,000 rand a year, and yeah, you know, and are you still comfortable to kind of pay those fees? So those are the intricacies that someone needs to do when the homework that they need to do if they're going to go the DIY route around these kinds of platforms as well. Because I think, you know, the wonderful thing about something like Easy Equities is it's completely democratizing investments for a whole new generation of investors, and that's wonderful. I'm just not sure, it's pure ignorance on my part, what they would charge someone. You know, if you said, okay, here's 5 million rand, you know, what are you going to charge me now? And it might be a very reasonable fee, it might not be. That's the homework that the DIY investor needs to do.
Thank you, Warren. And then finally, quick question for you on, I love these questions because I always learn something new, even though I think I know what the answer is to these questions. But what is value investing?
So there's kind of been this debate or this battle between investors for decades where you've got growth investors and value investors. And so typically a value investor, you know, the most famous value investor, I guess, of all time would be Warren Buffett. And what he would do is he would look at a company and he would say, if this company had to shut its doors tomorrow, how much could I sell all the assets of the company for? And let's just say, you know, it works out at 100 rand a share, you know, if they sold the properties and the machinery and all of those things. And if he looks at the share price today, and if the share price is at 80 rand, then he would say to himself, I've got a huge margin of safety here because I can buy this company. If things really go wrong, I can actually, you know, shut the doors of this business and make 20 rand a share profit on the original investment that I've done. So there is a value underlie in the investment decision that he's making. Whereas a growth investor would do something different. They would look at it and say, you know, I believe this company has got a wonderful business case. You know, it's got a long track record of being able to grow and grow and grow. So the actual net asset value of the company is not so important to me. It's about the future growth. So value investors, they definitely look at growth as well. They do look at the future, but they want to know that they're when they buy the share, that there's a solid value of assets inside the company that they can access if things really go wrong.
Good. Thank you, Warren Ingram. Short and sweet. Well, the explanation was short and sweet. Thank you, Warren Ingram from Galileo Capital.